Welcome to another edition of Black Teachers Matter. I'm your host, Sharon Eaton Hinton, and you're listening to WBCA LP 102.9 FM in Boston, trying to get it together. We've got an amazing show, as usual. United Sons and Daughters of Freedmen, talking about reparations and Juneteenth, and the first annual Historic Cultural Heritage Family Reunion Trip that's happening June 22nd to the 24th. And they need your help. We need your help in supporting a Boston Office for American Freedmen Affairs. Can I say that again? A Boston Office for American Freedmen Affairs. And what is that? First, let me introduce my guests. I have three of them, two of them on Zoom. Let's see. I have one in the studio. Here she is. Antonia Edwards, how you doing?
How are you? Good evening, everybody.
How you doing, gorgeous? How are you? Queen Antonia. She's holding it down. You guys have no idea. We were actually supposed to be here last night on Channel 3, Comcast, and that didn't happen. You know, thank you. It wasn't really the eclipse. It was some other crap, but that's okay because this is a different audience. And so, and then I also have two guests that are on Zoom, and I want to introduce them right now. We've got Brother Naeem and we've got Brother Jonathan. When we were in the other studio, Brother Jonathan was in the studio with Sister Antonia, but we have two people that Jonathan was in the studio, but he sort of is, but he's on Zoom. And Naeem was on Zoom, and he's still on Zoom, but that's cool. So there's four of us holding it down. And you know, I'm a Christian, so with two more gathered in God's name, there he is in the midst. So while we're doing God's work up in here, I want to actually, this was supposed to be a part two, and it kind of is a part two, because this will be shown on some of the same channels. But this is 102.9 FM in Boston, which is radio, and it's podcasts. So you'll be able to hear this online at www.bnnmedia.org live. We're live right now. It'll also be rebroadcast, recablecast, re-sent out through the airwaves, through multimedia. And WBCA LP 102.9 FM is actually in Boston live now. So I have to welcome all of my guests. You know, I'm sort of fronting my T-shirt that says Freedom Fighters. It's got all these black people up in here. Malcolm X and Huey P. Newton and whatnot. And so we're in a different kind of a studio, but we're talking about something that nationally and internationally has been a discussion for quite some time, reparations for African-Americans, descendants of slaves. But that conversation, I'm going to bring Antonia on, that conversation that you guys are having, the sons and daughters of Freedmen, is different, and how and why, because our listening audience needs to understand all these conversations are different and need to be different. And when you talk about freedmen, who are you talking about?
So, Sharon, my organization specifically advocates for the reparations and the remedial justices for American freedmen who are the 4 million formerly emancipated slaves. This was done with Field Order 15, also through the American Freedmen Act of 1865, which also created the American Freedmen Bureau and the American Freedmen Bank. For us, when we hear people speak of reparations, it's just really disheartening that they don't recognize our ancestors. And for me, I'm three generations from slavery. My mom was a illegal child sharecropper because her parents were sharecroppers on both sides because their parents were slaves. And so slavery wasn't that long ago. And so when I hear people speak of reparations, they never pay homage to the ancestors. And so, but for slavery, there would be no need for reparations. So our organization focuses on the historical and constitutional aspects of the American freedmen. We are a political status. It was given to us by President Lincoln. It's in documents. There's a American Freedmen Bureau. There's documents in congressional and congress.com for us. And we just want to make people aware of the fact of their heritage, their lineage, ancestralism, and make sure that in any reparations initiative that we're involved in, that our ancestors are respected and the plights and the badges and incidents of slavery are recognized as through the stains of slavery. And so a lot of people think it's very divisive. And it's not. You can't have slave reparations without addressing the original harm parties, which are our ancestors. Nowhere in the history has reparations been offered to generations or other people other than the original harm party, nor has it been offered with people not addressing the original harm party and asking them how they'd like to be repaired. And so that's what we do. We want to make sure it stays focused in lineage boundaries and make sure that it speaks to our ancestors who were lynched, castrated, ancestral breed, bred rather, who went through Jim Crow, Reconstruction, and then segregation.
Right. Segregation, discrimination, still happening. Mm-hmm. And the only people who have not received anything are African Americans, descendants of slaves. The Japanese have received it for the internment camps. There were Jewish descendants that received it because the Holocaust. There were slave masters that received reparations after the Civil War because they lost their property, which was our descendants. And so they received reparations. I want to bring on some of my guests here and actually have them introduce themselves and talk about their, you know, we've talked before, but we haven't talked on this platform. So I want people to be introduced to. I'll start with Ali first. Naheem. I'm sorry, brother. Start with Naheem first and introduce yourself and your aspect and your focus and your perspective on this whole issue of being a son of a freedman and this particular organization. Go ahead.
Hey, hello. How you doing? Thanks for having me back. I am Naheem Way. I am president and co-founder of United Sons and Daughters of Freedmen. We are a 501c3 organization that was formed in 2020 to assist with the educational aspects for the push for reparations. And during our research, my team and I, we uncovered the fact that we were given a legal status in this country after our ancestors were emancipated. And the name of that legal status was freedmen. And we were referenced in that day by this name as American freedmen. Mm-hmm. There are tons of documentation that shows this. And one of the things that our organization sought to do was specify language and understand legalese so that when we're making this push for remedial justice, we can, in fact, be victorious because we know that you cannot do reparations based on race. You cannot pass any legislation based on race. It is going to be challenged and it is going to be shot down. So in this, we were able to develop a framework by which we can use the status that was passed along to us from our ancestors so that we can remove the racial element out of the equation. For instance, Charles Sumner, who was the senator from Massachusetts, said that these people, speaking of us, need a Freedmen's Bureau, not because they are Negroes, but because they are men who have been for generations despoiled their rights. And from that point on to 2020, from 2020 until now, we have been able to perfect a lot of the language, and it was validated last June when the Supreme Court released its opinion on the affirmative action case. And a lot of people were sad about what happened with affirmative action. But when you look at it, when you actually read the case, the remedial justification of affirmative action is still good law. But it's for people that bear a specific status in this country. It is not based on race consciousness or diversity. So these are some of the things that we add into the equation.
Thank you for that. Before I get to Brother Jonathan, Naheem, So there's a couple of things you said, especially during this particular period of presidential election. On my way over here, there was a ride driver, and she and I, of color, Black women, African from Senegal, and she and I were talking about the need to be unified around specific issues that pertain directly to Black people and African-American people, but Africans and African-American people. If you are not a descendant of slaves or African-American, but you're Black, does this still affect you? And should you still be concerned?
No, right? Just the short answer. Because those persons did not go through the litany of harms that started with the institution of slavery.
But wait. So let me rephrase them, because maybe I didn't say that right.
Okay.
We're talking about people who look like us, who have benefited from being Black in this country, from the sacrifices that African-Americans did, who are now in this country, who are Black, maybe not African-American, but Black. Should they be unified with the African-Americans in this country for this purpose?
Reparations. Oh, excuse me. I definitely misunderstood your question. Yes, absolutely. Not only should it be them, it should be all Americans, because this is an issue of justice. This is an issue of American justice and this country finally atoning for what it calls its original sin. Absolutely, yes.
So, and that, thank you. That was my fault. I needed to be clearer in the questioning. That wasn't you. That was me. Jonathan, introduce yourself, please, again to this audience. If you just tuned in, you're listening to WBCA LP 102.9 FM in Boston. We're Boston's community radio station. This is another episode of Black Teachers Matter, and I'm your host, Sharon Eaton Hinton, host and producer. And so, Jonathan, take it away. Who are you? What are you doing? Why are you here?
Hello, well, my name is Jonathan Bryant. I'm a member of the United Sons and Daughters Freeman. I'm also a co-founder of Solidarity. That was an org that Sister Antonia and I found back in, I think it was 2019. But her and I met in 2018, and we started doing this reparations work together. I got into this work because of, well, personally, several things, but for one, when I learned that my ancestor was one of the first of 300 slaves to be sold into New London, Connecticut. Mm. And also his son, Job, who I am a descendant of, you know, fought in the Revolutionary War under Colonel Durkee's and was emancipated in 1778.
Stop right there for a second, because and Sister Antonia, she had a direct line and really could trace the line with her ancestors. You're just doing this too. And yes. One of the things that she said was so profound is we haven't been free that long, two generations away from slavery. And we are all, I'm going to say my age, maybe. But I remember still struggling and being part of that generation to fight for civil rights, voting rights, women's rights. That's in my generation. And I knew my great-grandparents and my grandparents. So are we, you know, some people look at the Black and white and Eyes on the Prize and think about roots and stuff like that, and they think that's a long time ago. How did you guys establish this link? And what does that mean for you to know that these are your ancestors? There's a direct lineage to your ancestors, and you're owed this money. Go ahead, well, Jonathan.
It was profound to me, you know. So, and I have a very large family from out of New London, Connecticut, and we're still there, you know. My family was part of building that city. And like I said, so just learning all this and then knowing all the things that we went through, you know, my family personally, yeah, it's just, you know, I had to get into this fight. It's just in me.
And so, Sister Antonia,
yes,
how did you feel about knowing that I mean, you actually did this show, and we're not going to pay the puppet, but there's a particular Black scholar, mm-hmm. and he traces people's roots, and, you know, he's got more different people on there than just Black people now.
Yes.
But, and I see the transformation when they make the connection, like generations and tracing their blood. How did you feel in knowing that? Because you knew some of these people, and then also uncovering your history. How does that connect you deeper? How do you feel in the fight?
I have a profound recollection of what my family escaped racial terror and came to Boston in the late 1940s. They escaped racial terror only to face racial terror here in Boston. My grandmother was a freedom fighter, and she made sure from a baby that I was back and forth from Boston down south to Barnwell, South Carolina. It was one of our cousins that I got a piece of the property that they actually sharecropped on. And so for every summer, when every other kids were going to camp or they were just hanging out in the community, I was down south. I was on the plantation, picking crops, shelling peas, slopping hogs, feeding pigs, pumping my own water, boiling water to take a bath in a tin tub, having also to use the outhouse. And my grandmother wanted to make sure that I never forgot where I came from. Mm. So I didn't have to research anything. I actually lived it. And so I didn't live as a slave. However, I lived as the remnants of sharecropping that my mom and my grandmother, both my parents are from South Carolina, and both of them are descendants of slaves, had went through. And so for me, I grew up in Roxbury, but I went to school in Needham. So I lived three different lives. I actually lived here in Roxbury, and I went to the suburbs to school, an hour away just about, and then I spent my summers down south. So I have a very diverse upbringing, and I have a profound respect and appreciation for our heritage, and that's why I fight the way that I do. Mm. And when I speak, most people think that I'm being divisive. Oh, you're anti-immigrant, you're xenophobic, and it has absolutely nothing to do with that. Any person who I come in contact from another country respects and understands and acknowledges their heritage. I just don't feel as though when I speak about my heritage, it should be offensive to anybody, whoever, regardless of who you are. I have a right to speak and protect my heritage and my ancestralism and the legacy that my family went through. And I just want to get that message out. I work with a team of profound brothers who are highly educated, constitutional historians. We have all the facts in place. There's nothing that's like an ideology or a theory. We have facts, and the facts that we have are grounded, and we've been able to get legislation to be pushed through. And so it was nothing that I ever had to trace. We have a family Bible. I know everybody on both sides of my family. I'm blessed to do that. Mm-hmm. Everybody on both sides of my family knows who I am. Mm-hmm. And I've seen the life that my mom and those lived. I mean, when I was down south, they had kerosene lamps. They all didn't have electricity. And it's not far removed. I'm 58 years old. And so, again, like when I talk to people who have no concept of slavery, it wasn't that long ago. It really wasn't.
You're a youngin.
I know.
You're a youngin. So I wanted to bring Naheem in here because the conversation that we had before at the other show, because this is actually part two. It's part one to some people in WBCA LP 102.9 FM in Boston, but it's part two in terms of this conversation. And we wanted to move it forward because you guys are talking about a Boston office.
Yes.
For American Freedmen Affairs. And I think Naheem was the one who was the historian before when we had him talking about the legal aspects of it. Am I right, Naheem?
Yes, we spoke about it, and Brother Ali.
Yes, and Brother Ali. Can we bring in the historic aspects of, you know, because I think, especially young people, they're not getting it. Mm. It's like this directly affects you. And then when, and I've seen Sister Antonia in the room, she and I have been in the room of the Boston Reparations discussions, and there's several players, sort of, in the room talking about these reparations. And so I hear conversations about, what are you going to do? Actually, today, this Jewish gentleman was on the transportation, and I wasn't there. But the driver relayed to me that he said, well, what are Black people going to do if they do get this money? What are they going to do with it? And so her response was the same people the Jewish people did. But so And I hear that conversation about, well, it's not all about money, or there's one particular group that's actually put a number on it to have a discussion and put it on the press release while they were still saying that that's not enough, but they put a number on it. And there's all these numbers being thrown around. And there's some states, California, that are actually getting reparations to individual descendants and when land was taken away. And then there's the whole discussion about Black farmers. So we know that the money, no matter how much money, billions and trillions, actually trillions, is not going to really cover the devastation, because Sister Antonia, you talked about, you know, the running from racial terror in this country. My grandparents were all Southerners, Mississippi, Alabama, South Carolina, North Carolina. And so I remember the stories, and some of them they didn't really want to talk about because it was just too horrific. But so, Brother Naheem, can you put this in context of it's really happening now, and what needs to happen now, and how people can actually become a part of this? They don't have to be a descendant of slave. They don't have to be Black, but it affects everybody.
It does.
And what does having a Boston office for American Freedmen Affairs do to this discussion or for this movement?
Yes, indeed. Yes, I believe that it is the duty of every American to seek justice. Justice is supposed to be colorblind in the United States of America, hence the symbolic image of Lady Justice wearing the blindfold, holding the scales of justice in her hand. So if one is an American citizen, excuse me, and he or she believes in justice, then there is no way that they should not be allied with us in this fight. Yeah. So I definitely want to stress that point. The importance of having an Office of American Freedmen Affairs is that now we get to have a way to have direct resources going to a direct people. And I believe that's the city of Boston. There is legislation. I'm not sure if that legislation has passed or not. Sister Antonia can correct me on that one. For an Office of Latin and Caribbean Affairs. And I may be saying the name wrong. However, the fact that this office exists, the fact that an Office of New America exists, when you look up the Office of New America, New Americans and its functions, one of the things that you'll notice is that they disperse funds all over the United States of America to these newly arriving immigrant groups. And they teach them civics. They teach them politics. They teach them how to be engaged in the political apparatus in this country. And the thing, I heard you speaking about the youth. We have a different perspective in this country because we have to, as we say in the streets, get it from the mud. And so this thing may interfere with that thing that the people in the streets are trying to do. I was blessed to be driven around the city of Boston yesterday by Sister Antonia and Brother Jonathan, and they were able to show me that there were no freedmen businesses in the city. And most of the businesses were owned and operated by those of immigrant stock. And most of the freedmen that I saw lived in dilapidated conditions. They were homeless. You know, they were on the streets. They were in front of the methadone clinics, et cetera, et cetera. We believe that an Office of Freedmen Affairs, where our people can go and get direct resources, where they can get job workforce training, where they can get rental assistance, where they can get utility assistance, while we're putting the pieces to the puzzle together to boost that $8 median in a city like Boston to what it should be, past, you know, even the $13,000 that we find for the Caribbean, then we understand the importance of such an office. And I want to add one more brief thing when it comes to the money aspect of it, because a lot of people like to downplay the monetary aspect of reparations. When you do any research into UBIs, Universal Basic Income programs that have been launched, not just across the country, but across the world, there were and there are several aspects that have been documented to show the improvement of the people receiving this money. For instance, freedom to, you know, just have a little money to do things.
We just lost your audio. We just lost your audio. Hold on. We just lost his audio, and I don't know why. He's still talking, but he can't understand that we just lost his audio. Microphone. Oh. So let me go for a second because we need to get a hold of him. And we need to get a hold of Brother Naheem. I don't know if Brother Jonathan, if you can text him.
I just text him.
Yeah, you text him and tell him that we just lost his audio.
So can I just expand upon why it's important to have an Office of Freedmen Affairs?
Yeah.
So we have many grassroots organizations who are trying to control the narrative, revive for the control over reparations. People ask all the time, well, what would black people do with cash reparations? Well, no other group of people have ever been asked those questions, nor did they have to provide receipts or an accounting of any reparations they receive. And I don't think people understand how disrespectful that is. I mean, it's very disrespectful to ask a person how are they going to spend the debt that's owed to them or inheritance. And so one of the big things that we try to make sure people understand is reparations is a debt that's owed by the federal government, first and foremost. The initiatives that are going around the country that are being created aren't by American freedmen. They're by other groups of people whom and which have started these initiatives. And we just want to set the narrative straight that it's not about African slaves or black slaves. It's about American freedmen. That's the legal and constitutional name for us. And so we need to have that in the verbiage. And it's really important that we set the record straight. When it comes to the cities and the municipals and states offering any cash reparations, it's up to really them. We're asking for acts of atonement, truth and reconciliation. However, we do know that there's going to be some sort of expectation from the community for cash reparations. And that's really up to the city and state. We just want to make sure that the Office of Freedmen Affairs is put in place so that there is an administrator to administrate these remedies, whether it be cash, whether it be land, whether it be other tangibles, and not any specific grassroots organization that goes under any specific person's ideology. Like, for instance, we wouldn't want to be in charge of reparations and administering them to the community. It should be a state municipal agency that has the oversight as to how these funds and how these resources are being distributed. Also, the primary purpose for an American Freedmen Bureau, which we're advocating to have start immediately, is we need a register. We need to find out who is an American Freedman. Our data is so mixed up with all others because in America, anybody who is of melanin is considered a person of color or black African American, and that's not necessarily the truth. We're the only country that's race-based. We were created based on race. Other people don't call themselves black and African American in their prospective countries who are considered black in America. Most people come to America and say they don't even know they were black until they came to America, and because that's the founding of America was based on race, black and white. So we need to have disaggregated data in order for us to have reparations, the true reparations dispersed to the true harm party. We need an Office of Freedmen Affairs so we can get people to come and register, apply, get the documentation together, and have genealogy services to do that. You just cannot disperse reparations to anybody who's black or who's of color or who's melanated. That's the most absurd thing that I've ever heard of before. And so when people make those statements like black Bostonians or black people in Boston, that just really hurts the whole reparation process. And we know that Boston will never be able to pay reparations to anybody who is of melanin in the city of Boston, nor the state of Massachusetts. And so that's why we really educate people on the fact that the original harm party are the American freedmen. And this Office of Freedmen Affairs that we're highly advocating for, and we're getting great attention on it. Our petition for support has 106 people in a week. We just started this petition last week, and we're still moving. And we have spoken to legislators with regards to it, and they're really receptive to it. And it makes sense. If we're going to have reparations and we don't have a way of deciphering who's eligible or who is the original harm party, this Office of Freedmen Affairs would do that. And so that's what we primarily want it for, but also to be the ongoing administrator of any resources, just like the Latino and Caribbean Office of Affairs that's been proposed. And I think it's going to go through, or the Office of New Americans and also the Office of Immigration.
Thank you. And we are going to have to take a little short break because I want to make sure that we've actually got our technical difficulties straight now. We're going to take a short break. If you just tuned in, this is WBCA LP 102.9 FM. I'm your host, Sharon Eaton Hinton. This is an episode of Black Teachers Matter, and we are talking to the United Sons and Daughters of Freedmen. Take a short break. Be right back. Don't go anywhere.
Psychologist, social worker, drug expert, sex counselor, substitute parent, and friend. Now, those are some of the things teachers have to be before they even get down to teaching. Now, the more you know what it takes to be a teacher these days, the more you realize that it's one of the toughest, most important jobs in the world. So what can you do to thank your teacher? It's simple. Learn.
This newspaper's got good news and bad news. The good news is that it's loaded with jobs for accountants and lawyers and nurses and carpenters and every other kind of skilled worker. The bad news is that there isn't a single ad for a school dropout, at least nothing you'd want. The more you know how tough things are for school dropouts, the more you'll see you have no choice. You have to stay in school. Think about it.
I can't believe that some of you guys still think it's cool to drink and drive. Well, read my lips. Anybody that's going to drive me home has got to be in condition to get me there in one piece. The more you know how I feel about drinking and driving, the more you know that if you drink and drive, I'm not going anywhere with you. But if you happen to be the designated driver, well, you can take me home anytime.
I don't know. Help me out here. It's a punching bag, right? I mean, it doesn't talk, it doesn't laugh. It sure doesn't give you a hug when you need one. Yet some of you insist on mistaking your children for it. How's that possible? I mean, when you hit a punching bag, it doesn't cry.
Back in the fifth grade, I had a favorite school pastime. Teacher torture. Poor Mrs. Sheldon Fry. I left fake vomit on her desk, set off stink bombs at lunch, painted the class hamster light blue, and the thing was, I liked Mrs. Sheldon Fry, and she liked me. And I learned a lot that year. So, to all the teachers who helped kids learn in spite of themselves, thanks. And to Mrs. Sheldon Fry, did you ever find those dead frog parts?
Some guys will try to tell you that hanging out on the street and messing with guns gets you respect. Well, they're wrong. They're dead wrong. Because sooner or later, you're going to kill someone. And you're going to do time for it. Or someone's going to blow you away because they know you're armed. Don't kid yourself, man. You know what happens to guys who carry guns. Wise up. It's your life we're talking about. Don't let a gun kill your future.
So we're back, and we've straightened out all the technical difficulties, I think. If you've just tuned in, this is another episode of Black Teachers Matter here on WBCA LP 102.9 FM in Boston. I'm your host, Sharon Eaton Hinton, and my guests are Antonia Edwards, Jonathan Bryant, and he's going to get me. Naheem Way. Had to reach back just a little bit. And we'll be here. We're here live now. Some of you are listening to us on WBCA LP 102.9 FM. Some of you are listening to us and will be listening to us on Spotify, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, or on bnnmedia.org. And so we're back here, and I wanted to just go right back to, and it was like he was getting so deep into my brother was into it, and there was no way for me really say, we can't hear you, but explaining the historical significance of reparations and why, and the Boston office, the need for a Boston office of sons and daughters of freedmen, Boston office for American freedmen affairs, excuse me, not just sons and daughters, but American freedmen affairs in Boston, because there are other offices that are being created for people who don't seem to be having a problem getting money that we work for free. So, Brother Naheem, I think we have you back. You don't look like you're muted. I don't know if you remember, you know, sort of like when you're on the phone with somebody and you're talking and they're like, I can't hear you. So we were talking about, you were right in the middle of explaining the importance of getting these reparations and how the generations need to understand, the ones now who weren't necessarily the ones who sacrificed for it, but are benefiting from it. Just all Americans need to come together and understand the need for justice in this issue of reparations, correct? Oh, Lord have mercy. I can't hear you again. Stop it. Can't hear you. Oh, wait. Go for it.
Check, check.
Got you. One, now. Two. Got you now. Got you now. Okay, okay.
Yes, sorry. I don't know what happened. But yes, we, like I was saying, we need to ensure that resources are getting into the hands of the American freedmen. I don't know where I got cut off at, but I was speaking about, I was in the city of Boston yesterday, and
we heard that part you looking at all the people that are like in the on the street and living on the street, and there's no businesses.
That's right.
That are really owned by the descendants of slaves. There used
That's
to be.
Right.
There, now you're in Georgia, right?
Yes.
And so yeah, Georgia's way different. I mean,
way different.
Way. Georgia's way different. And you know what's interesting is that I actually have been talking to people about that are moving back. I mean, there was this great migration for everybody coming up north, and it seems, I mean, I don't know, you're living down there now, so you could tell, but people are moving back down south because what we were fleeing from back then, and from Mississippi to Mississippi, now people are going back down south because although the health outcomes and stuff is really not good, it's just the basic support. And being around your people or something. I don't know. Are you seeing people moving back down that way?
Yes, in droves, actually. And this is also a part of the strategy that we at United Sons and Daughters of Freedmen and our political advocacy group, Be the Power, also push. We push for a reverse migration because about 64% of us, I believe it is, live in the southern states. So if we were able to get just half, 22% of our people to come back into these southern states, we can then field our own senators. We can be in control over state budgets. Look at Jackson, Mississippi. The white legislative body there intentionally did not allocate funds for their water crisis. Intentionally held back funds, COVID relief funds that were supposed to go to the poor citizens there. They gave Brett Favre the millions of dollars that the federal government allocated for our poor people, our brothers and sisters in that state to Brett Favre so that he can build his daughter a soccer stadium.
Oh, I remember that. That was a big thing. That was a big thing, but he got away with it, though. He got away with it.
Well, I wouldn't. It's still pending. Let's just say that I'm not certain he necessarily got away with it, but they need to speed up the process because he's a welfare queen, and didn't Ronald Reagan paint one woman as the welfare queen, and he went on this campaign on why black people shouldn't get welfare anymore. But this guy's a welfare queen.
We don't want to waste.
I ever saw one.
We don't want to waste no time on the Cheeto man, but Jonathan, I want to bring you in here. Were you originally born? Were you originally born in Boston, Jonathan?
No, I was actually born in New London, Connecticut.
Oh, that's right. You did talk about Connecticut, and there's a separate reparations piece that's happening there too now, right?
Yes, that was Well, there's something brewing there, but Sister Antonia and I were working on that out there. We pushed first legislation out there for that.
Okay, and in terms of being here now in Boston, and I'm sitting here listening to Brother Naheem, and it just gives me flashbacks of what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was talking about a long time ago. Like, give us just these states right here and we'll be cool. Is that the way you feel? Or you just, you digging your feet into New England and it's like, we fought for this too, and I'm not giving up anything. How are you feeling about this whole discussion and where you and your family fit in?
As far as Boston?
I mean, just as far as you and your family, yeah.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, I feel a victory for any of us in any state is a victory for all of us. So, but as far as Boston, this is Sister Antonia's spot. You know, this is her roots. And, you know, I came out here. Well, I live in Lowell, actually, now. So, but I'm out here with her fighting, you know, the reparations fight with her, you know, for her city and for the freedmen of Boston, the freedmen of Massachusetts, period.
Mm-hmm.
And it does affect my family because, you know, with them uplift, I'm part of that $8. You know what I mean? So, you know.
So yeah, I'm wondering, Sister Antonia, yes. When we're coming down to like the last 10 minutes, it always goes like that, right? So we set up what we want to talk about, and we'll actually have you guys back when we get closer to the Juneteenth family
Thank
reunion
you.
Trip. It's June 22nd to the 24th, but,
right.
And it doesn't. So it's African American History and Culture Museum tour. So this is a tour that's going to D.C.?
Yes, it's going to be a day trip. And actually, it's hotel, food, open bar for like 2 hours. There's going to be a comedian and it's going to be a party. And then that's on a Saturday. And then that Sunday, we go to the museum. So it's all inclusive. And I think the trip is around $300. It's to me.
We can't mention how much
I'm
it is.
I'm sorry. It's not a lot for the inclusivity of the amenities that's being offered. And the reason why we wanted to do this trip is because it's for Juneteenth. There's no real representation in the city of Boston across the nation for Juneteenth. Most Juneteenth parades and celebration have a red, black, and green flag. And that's not the flag for American freedmen. It's the Black Heritage flag for us, which is red, black, and gold. Also the Juneteenth Lone Star flag and also the red, white, and blue. So instead of us participating in community events that for some reason refused to respect our heritage, we decided to take people on the tour to the museum to show them visually why we are, you know, pushing and trying to educate people on our heritage. I think it's more important that people have those visual aids. So
the thing that we will show is that we'll show a flyer.
Sure. Thank you so much.
Yep. And excuse me, if people want to get more information, they can call 347-709-1122, or they can go to the website www.usadof.org, and they'll be able to see the flyer and get the information if they want more information. We've got a few more minutes coming down. I want to get Brother Naheem, because he's out of town and he's down south. You know, I don't know. I'm just feeling pulled that way to get the. I'm sorry I missed you yesterday, but I don't know.
Can I make a statement?
Sure.
I am a person who had the down south strategy. I grew up in Boston, and after raising two kids and working two jobs, I was paying $2,800 in Dorchester and got fed up. And I actually moved down south. I lived in Charlotte and then Virginia Beach, and my money spent much better. I only came back up to Boston to take care of my mom, who has dementia. And let me tell you, a one bedroom at $3,900 is ridiculous to me. But that's what we're being faced with. Us who are descendants of slaves having to come back or live in Boston or having to come back, whatever. And so most people who are of the close to retirement age do go back down south. And that's where they see where they have more bargain for their money. And they see that they can have a house, they can, you know, 4,500 square foot house, double garage, backyard, whereas we're really congested here. So I am one of the people from Boston who benefited from the back of the south strategy. However, due to family circumstances, but can't take care of my mom who has frontal temporal dementia, I had to come back. But I cannot wait to go back down south.
So you still have another house? A house?
I do. Yeah, I do. It's being rented out. Mm-hmm.
So I'll be coming to visit you then.
You can. You can. You can.
No, don't. We have witnesses now. You heard what you said, right? Now, yes. Where is it in Georgia? Is it in Georgia?
Virginia Beach.
Ooh.
I lived in Charlotte, but then I ended up in Virginia Beach. But just to come back home and having to be faced with these astronomical rents and the jobs don't, the cost of living is much higher than the wages here. And as Naheem and Jonathan point out, our wealth is only $8, and that's American freedmen wealth, not just black people. That's just us as descendants of slaves. So that's why this is really important for us.
Well, that's in Boston.
In Boston.
And the Caucasians is 247,000.
Yes, it is.
That's significant. Now, let me go to Brother Naheem, because we've got like about 9 minutes
no
here.
No problem.
So you know, Brother Naheem, I just came back from Los Angeles a couple of weeks ago. My brothers live there. They've been living there for 30-something-odd years. There's no place in this world, on this planet, where there are not black people. I mean, it's just we're all over the place. I mean, a lot of people don't like that. I personally love it. But moving down south, I experienced, like Sister Antonia was saying, like home. Like people are, hey, how y'all doing? And you know, so it's a lot. People don't think I'm from here because I'm very friendly. It's, hi, how are you? And they're like, exactly. Are you from here? So I hear that, right? But what would that really mean? I mean, because if you own property here, and a lot of black people were pushed out of owning their own homes, over 300 homes in Roxbury, Dorchester, like over about 20 years ago. And then there's still redlining going on and still the difficulty of living. Mm-hmm. How easy is it? Or how much easier would it be? We heard from Sister Antonia, but Brother Naheem, to be able to actually make that transition back down south. How much easier would that be?
I think that it's easy in the sense that many of us still have family in the South. Mm. Our family can point us to resources. They can link us with jobs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I think that combustible mix of the frenetic Northern pace with the Southern slowed down pace and everyone getting on one accord will actually be beneficial, because we're bringing together two worlds that have really been separated for the past several decades. I've visited Charlotte a lot of times, and I'm able to see the New York presence there and how it's blended with the Southern hospitality. And it's definitely a place that I would move to, definitely.
Now, wouldn't that complicate, as black people in this country, is reverse migration or everything, complicated? Because I remember the last reparations meeting in the bowling building, that was one of the questions I brought up. If the commission that Mayor Wu has put together is just going to solely concentrate in the people in Boston that can be traced in Boston, when a lot of people came to Boston, came, Midwest and West and North to escape down south, if there's no federal coordination, how does this ever get do you ever see this getting resolved in our lifetime? And how does that happen when people have had to move?
Yes, of course.
If we just stick in Boston, I believe Antonia said her family moved up in the 1940s. Mm-hmm. My family moved up to New York City in the 1960s. So we're generations into the badges and incidents of slavery in these places. We've never escaped that. Mm-hmm. So as residents, I mean, let's reverse the question. Why is it that there's funding for people that just got off a plane last week? New York City is proposed to give out debit cards. I can't remember what the number, the amount is on those debit cards, while we have homeless freedmen on the streets of New York City. So I don't think that that's going to be a problem. I think that understanding the American freedmen plight in the city of Boston, and also understanding that people migrated in, since Reconstruction, that, I just don't believe that that's going to be an issue.
We're coming down to the last few minutes, like 4 minutes. And So I'm going to go to each one of you and end up with Sister Anthony. And I appreciate you, Brother Naeem Way and Jonathan Bryant and Antonia Edwards being here in this edition. This is an ongoing issue, and I'm going to have to bring you guys back again, especially towards the Juneteenth Freedom Day celebration. Can people go to this www.usadof.org to sign the petition, Sister Antonia?
Yes. As a matter of fact, it is on that website. It should be on that website, and also the tour.
And so this... the website and the tour, and if anybody wanted information, they can go there and they can sign up. And the petition is for the office to be established, correct?
Yes, it is. The Office of Freedmen Affairs. And also, I just want to make something clear. We're asking for the Office of Freedmen Affairs to be created in the city of Boston as well as the state of Massachusetts.
So is it the same? It would be
the same thing. And then it would just funnel up to the federal government to reactivate the Freedmen's Bureau.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so... one last word, about a minute apiece. I'm going to start with Brother Jonathan and then Naeem and then end up with Sister Antonia. One last thing that's really important that you want people to recognize and remember, Brother Jonathan.
Well, I would just like the people of Boston to recognize, well, to really just be educated on what American Freedmen is, and also, you know, to pay homage and respect to our ancestors, because this is where it all begins. And this is where, you know, the justice claim is due to the harmed party, us, American Freedmen. And I would just leave it at that, because that seems to be an issue. So I would just like to leave with that.
Okay, Brother Naeem.
Yes, yes. First, again, thank you for having me on again. And my message would be this, that our people will know what to do with the resources that comes, because there's, you know, this sentiment that our people shouldn't get money or shouldn't get repair based on their needs, and that their needs should be handled by other individuals. This is a horrible white supremacist way of thinking. That's one message that I want to put. And the other message is to those that would be allies. I want you to think about the fact that this is the greatest, most prosperous country in the world. And it's because it's that way because of our ancestors building this country with free slave labor for about 150 years or more. And then you had convict leasing and other aspects to which these people found ways to exploit us, to help build and enrich this country that many people are taking advantage of right now. Think about that as you waver, or if you waver on if you support reparations in the city of Boston, the state of Massachusetts, or the United States of America in general.
Thank you. And Sister Antonia.
I want to piggyback off both my colleagues' sentiments. My thing that I want to leave with is just, please, we're giving a workshop on April 22nd at 4:30. It's going to be a Zoom link. I don't have a problem giving you my name, my phone number, my email address. So it's Antonia Edwards. My email address is my name, antonia.edwards@yahoo.com. My phone number is 757-589-6239. Again, that's 757-589-6239. We give workshops just about every month. And most of the information that you heard today, we basically give that information out to the public, and also dive more deeper, because we have Brother Ali, who's a constitutional scholar, and he gives information on the constitutional laws. And we have Josh, who's an economic major. So he has that information as well, too. In order for people to really fight for their existences as for American freedmen, we have to be educated. And we're here to provide that education for our community, for our people, so that when we're going up against these legislation and we're going up against these reparation bills and task force, that we have the most up-to-date information that we can provide for our purpose of fighting for it, so that I can give you additional information on our upcoming workshops.
Gotta go. Thank you so much for my guests. Thank you so much for being here. You've been listening to WBCA LP 102.9 FM in Boston, Black Teachers Matter. Good night.